Hello, and welcome to Administrative Remedies, because you can't fix what you don't understand. Brought to you in part by the University of Tulsa College of Law. I'm Gwendolyn Savitz, an associate professor here at TU and the Associate Dean of Research and Intellectual Life.
And I'm Mark Rourke. I'm the Dean of the College of Law.
We'll be breaking down complex doctrines with real-life analogies and examples to demystify the world of administrative law for everyone trying to understand how government actually works.
Agencies are the main way the federal government gets things done. It's not through Congress, for reasons we'll be addressing over the course of this series.
Welcome back to Administrative Remedies. We're going to do things a little differently this week. The tariff decision came down on Friday, and it's too important for us to not cover it immediately. So we're going to do it as a bonus episode and tack it with season one, since that's the material it really goes with. We're splitting it into two episodes today because a lot of the coverage is muddying to really important and different parts of the Roberts opinion. The part where six justices agree on the result, and the part where only three sign on to the major questions doctrine analysis. Those are not the same thing, and the distinction matters enormously. This first episode is the holding, what all six majority justices agree on. The second episode will be the fracture, where we talk about the seven separate opinions and what they're fighting about. Next week, we will be back to regular season two content. So, Mark, you hire a babysitter. And before you leave, you tell them that if the kids start going crazy with snacks, they can regulate their access to the pantry. If they're grabbing junk food every 5 minutes, they can limit what they take. They can cut them off after a certain point. If it's really getting out of hand, they can lock the pantry entirely. You want the babysitter to use their judgment.
Yeah, okay, that sounds reasonable. You're giving them options to handle things if they become a problem.
All right, so now imagine that you come home and the kids tell you that the babysitter decided to start charging them a dollar every time they wanted a snack.
So the babysitter was running a side hustle on top of the babysitting gig.
Yes. So you confront the babysitter and say, "What on earth are you doing?" And the babysitter says, "You told me to regulate their snack access. That's what I'm doing. I could have banned snacks entirely. You said I could lock the pantry. Charging a dollar per snack is less restrictive than that. I'm not banning anything. I'm just putting a price on it. That's regulation."
Okay, there's a logic to that, right? That the market access does create some controls. So I guess on the surface, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, it can. The babysitter's right, you said regulate. Babysitter's right that charging a fee is, at least in some senses, less severe than a total ban, but it still feels wrong. And when you think about why it feels wrong, you realize it's because you told the babysitter to manage the snack situation, to set rules, to control access. You never told them they could collect money from the kids. Those are different things.
Okay, so the question isn't really whether the babysitter has the authority or has this kind of authority. It's whether this particular authority, the power to charge the kids money for snacks, was part of the original deal.
Yes, and so really whether when you said they could regulate stuff, that's enough to get them to charging snacks. And in the real world, that distinction between regulating and taxing determined whether the president of the United States could impose tariffs under a law that never mentioned tariffs at all.
Okay, so on February 20th, the Supreme Court answered that question. The case is Learning Resources, Inc. v. Trump, and the vote was 6-3, and the answer was no.
Correct. So IEEPA, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, gives the president broad authority to deal with emergencies. It authorizes the president to regulate importation, but six justices concluded that the power to regulate importation does not include the power to impose tariffs. The power to tax is a different power, a power that belongs to Congress, and Congress never gave it away in that statute.
Okay, so let's start with the statute. What is it and what does it actually say?
IEEPA was passed in 1977, and the basic idea was pretty straightforward. It gives the president a set of economic tools to respond to foreign threats. It's like an emergency toolkit for international crises.
Okay, what kind of threats was Congress thinking about?
Well, the statute says that the president has to identify an unusual and extraordinary threat to national security, foreign policy, or the economy. This has to come from primarily outside the United States. If the president declares a national emergency under the National Emergencies Act, once that happens, IEEPA unlocks a set of specific powers.
And those powers are what maps onto the babysitter analogy.
Exactly. So here's the key provision, and the entire case turns on these words.
Under IEPA, the president may investigate, block during the pendency of an investigation, regulate, direct, and compel, nullify, void, prevent, or prohibit any acquisition, holding, withholding, use, transfer, withdrawal, transportation, importation, or exportation of or dealing in or exercising any right, power, or privilege with respect to any transactions involving any property in which any foreign country or a national thereof has any interest.
And if you're wondering, it looks about as confusing on the paper as it does online.
It's a mouthful.
It really is. So the important part is what's in there and what isn't. There are 9 different verbs. Investigate, block, regulate, direct, compel, nullify, void, prevent, prohibit. Those are 9 specific things that the president can do. And a list of the things he can do them to, things like transfers, imports, and exports. It's broad, but it's also specific in a way that matters.
Because tariff isn't one of those verbs, right? So a duty isn't in there. Tax isn't in there. It seems like Congress was not giving this authority to the president to say, this special thing we call tariffs and taxes, you don't have the power to do this under this act.
Right, exactly. So none of those words appear. And that's like at the beginning with the babysitter analogy, when the parent said, regulate, limit, restrict, cut off, or lock, they never said charge.
Okay, so actually, how has IEPA actually been used? If it's been around since 1977, it has to have a history.
Yeah, presidents have used it continuously, at least dozens of times, but they always did it for what would look more like sanctions. So blocking the assets of a foreign regime, prohibiting transactions with weapon proliferators, freezing property connected to terrorism, those are the things everybody agrees IEPA was designed for.
Ah, but no tariffs.
Yes. In the 50 years, almost, across 8 presidents from both parties, no one had ever used IEPA to impose any sort of tariff. And when presidents wanted to impose tariffs, and they definitely did, there have been tariffs, they had completely different statutes they used to do that. Statutes that were specifically about customs and trade. And those statutes look really different from IEPA.
So show us some of those differences. How exactly did they look different?
Each one of them uses the word duty. They also cap the rate. One caps it at 50%, another at 15%. They impose time limits. One requires a phase down after a year. Another limits the tariff to 150 days. And they also require procedural steps before it can actually happen, like investigations by the International Trade Commission, public hearings, published findings. So limits on the rate, limits on the time, requirements for process before it happens. IEPA has none of that.
Okay, so that's the statute. But what actually happened? How did this controversy actually kick off?
All right. Shortly after he took office, Trump officially determined that 2 foreign threats existed that he said justified action under IEPA. So the first was what he said was an influx of illegal drugs from Canada, Mexico, and China. And the second was large and persistent trade deficits. So this idea that the United States was importing far more than it was exporting, and that this was hollowing out American manufacturing and undermining critical supply chains.
And he then declared national emergencies for both of those.
Yeah, so he said each one was an unusual and extraordinary threat, which is the language that IEPA requires. And then he invoked his powers under IEPA to regulate importation, which he did by imposing tariffs. Big ones.
How big?
For the drug trafficking emergency, it was 25% on most imports from Canada and Mexico and 10% on most imports from China. But for the trade deficit emergency, it was at least 10% on all imports from all trading partners. And plenty of countries had rates that were much higher than that. And these rates kept changing. Eventually, at one point, the total effective tariff rate on most Chinese goods was about 145%.
Okay, so what does that actually mean for someone buying things?
It means that a $200 piece of equipment manufactured in China could have $290 in tariffs added on top before it even reached a store shelf. A small business that was importing parts for manufacturing could see those input costs more than double overnight. And because the rates kept changing, and they were changing sometimes day to day, importers couldn't plan anything. The Chief Justice's opinion described a dizzying array of modifications. It can also take like 2 to 3 weeks for something to just physically move from China to the United States. So people trying to place orders had no idea what the rate was going to be when the goods arrived.
And this wasn't targeted at a single product or a country. It was just universally applicable.
Right. This was a comprehensive, constantly shifting tariff regime covering essentially all American trade, imposed and modified at the president's sole discretion, with no procedural prerequisites, no caps, and no time limits.
All based on two words in a 1977 statute.
Yes, two words separated by 16 other words, regulate and importation.
Okay, so let's get to what the court actually said here.
Before we start, I want to be really clear about something. The whole reason we broke these into different episodes, because it matters a lot. So the Roberts opinion, that's the majority opinion. It has multiple parts, but not all of them have the same legal force. So parts 1, 2A1, and 2B are the official opinion of the court. Those are the ones that six justices signed on to, and those parts are binding law. But parts 2A2 and 3 are only plurality opinions. There are only three justices for those. That's where the major questions doctrine analysis happens. And that one we are saving for the next episode. This time, we're just focusing on what all the justices agreed on.
Okay, so the holding we're about to discuss doesn't depend on major questions doctrine at all.
It does not. Six justices agreed that ordinary statutory interpretation, just reading the words of the statute in their proper context, is enough to resolve the case. And the opinion begins not with IUPA, but with the Constitution, because the power at issue here is one the framers cared about potentially more than almost any other.
The taxing power. It's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, the very first enumerated power given to Congress.
Yes, and Roberts frames it that way, so he sets up everything that follows. Read this part.
Okay, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution sets forth the powers of the legislative branch. The first clause of that provision specifies that the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. It is no accident that this power appears first. The power to tax was, Alexander Hamilton explained, the most important of the authorities proposed to be conferred upon the Union. It is both a power to destroy and a power necessary to the existence and prosperity of a nation, the one great power upon which the whole national fabric is based.
So here, Roberts is reminding everyone that the Constitution grants Congress the power to tax, and it does it before it grants Congress the power to regulate commerce or the power to declare war, before everything else, and that the framers did this deliberately.
Because they just fought a revolution that started with taxation.
Exactly. So here they were giving Congress, and more specifically the House, because that's where taxation legislation needs to start, sole authority over taxes. They did not vest any part of that taxing authority in the executive branch.
And tariffs are taxes. Is that settled law?
Yes. Roberts quotes other cases saying that tariffs are very clearly a branch of the taxing power. A tariff is a tax levied on imported goods, and the first Congress's first exercise of its taxing power, the second law it enacted right after one about taking oaths, was a tariff.
Okay, so the government wasn't arguing the president has some inherent power to impose tariffs.
No. So the government conceded that the president had no inherent peacetime authority to impose tariffs. Their entire case rests on IEEPA, on the argument that Congress delegated the tariff power when it authorized the president to regulate importation. The question is whether that delegation actually happened. Now we're getting to the heart of the textual holding, and the court's making several moves. Each one builds up on the last one. So, like we said before, IEEPA lists nine specific verbs. It names multiple kinds of transactions. Congress went to the trouble of specifying all of these, but it never mentioned tariffs. It never mentioned duties. If Congress had wanted to convey the extraordinary power to impose tariffs, the court says, it would have done so expressly, as it consistently has in every other tariff statute.
But couldn't Congress just have thought regulate was broad enough to cover it? I mean, maybe they didn't think they needed a separate word.
All right. Valid point. So the court looks at the definition of regulate, and here's where they quote from Black's Law Dictionary. And this is the version that was in effect when IEEPA was enacted.
Okay, so Robert says, as a matter of ordinary meaning, the term regulate means to fix, establish, or control, adjust by rule, method, or established mode, direct by rule or restriction, or subject to governing principles or laws.
All right, it's a pretty broad word.
Yeah, so what's the problem?
The problem is what it doesn't include, which is taxation. And this isn't a theoretical point. Here's how the court drives it home.
The U.S. Code is replete with statutes granting the executive the authority to regulate someone or something. yet the government cannot identify any statute in which the power to regulate includes the power to tax. The government concedes, for example, that the Securities and Exchange Commission cannot tax the trading of securities, even though it is expressly authorized to regulate the trading of securities. We are therefore skeptical that in IEEPA and IEEPA alone, Congress hid a delegation of its birthright power to tax within the quotidian power to regulate.
Yeah, so that's the issue. The government's position would have required the court to accept that in one statute and one statute alone, the word regulate means something it is never meant anywhere else in the entire U.S. code. The SEC regulates security trading, but it can't tax it. The FCC regulates broadcasting, but it can't tax it. The FDA regulates drugs, but it can't tax them. Every agency in the federal government regulates something, and none of them reads that authority to automatically include the power to impose taxes.
The birthright power to tax, hidden within the quotidian power to regulate, that's just a great line. Salute to you, John Roberts.
All right. Quotidian means everyday or ordinary. This is essentially saying that Congress hands out the power to regulate like plastic cutlery, whereas it treats the power to tax like the family silver. The idea that one is hidden inside the other just isn't plausible.
The court also addresses the government's export argument.
Yeah, so this is pretty hard for the government to recover from. IEEPA authorizes the president to regulate importation or exportation. Same verb, same sentence. It applies to both imports and exports. If regulate includes the power to tax, then the president could tax exports.
But the Constitution expressly forbids export taxes. No tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state.
Yeah, so the government's reading would make IEEPA at least partly unconstitutional. And courts generally try to read statutes in ways that don't make the statutes unconstitutional. So the fact that regulate applies identically to imports and exports in the same provision, but taxation would be constitutionally permitted for one and forbidden for the other, is pretty strong evidence that regulate wasn't meant to include taxation in the first place. And then there's also the other verbs. Those other verbs all describe things you might do in a sanctions contest, like blocking assets or prohibiting transactions or compelling disclosures, voiding unauthorized dealing. Each one of those is a regulatory action. None of them is the distinct power to raise revenue. And decades of presidential practice confirms this. Presidents have used these verbs to sanction foreign actors and to control transactions, never to impose taxes.
But the government didn't just roll over. They had some real arguments, like you generally can't separate tariffs from trade regulation historically. They've always been intertwined, so doesn't regulate importation naturally include tariffs?
The court says here that this is answering the wrong question. The question isn't whether tariffs could be a means of regulating commerce. Of course they could. The question is whether Congress, when it wrote the specific words regulate importation in this specific statute, intended to give the president the power to impose tariffs at his sole discretion. And Congress's pattern of usage is the most relevant evidence. When Congress grants the tariff power, it uses the word duty. It sets caps. It imposes time limits. It requires procedural steps. All things that it did not do in IEEPA.
And then there's the greater includes the lesser argument. IEEPA lets the president ban imports entirely. A total embargo. Everyone agrees about that, so why can't the president do the less extreme thing and just impose a tariff? Just condition imports on a payment.
This is potentially the argument that will resonate most with non-lawyers, and it's one that the principal dissent really pushes. If you can do this bigger thing, why can't you do this smaller thing?
Because they're not the same kind of thing.
That's the court's answer, and that's the reason we started this with that hypo. Tariffs aren't a smaller version of an embargo. They're a different kind of thing entirely. An embargo is a regulatory action. It controls what crosses the border. A tariff is a tax. It's raising revenue for the Treasury. They're not on the same spectrum. The court says tariffs are different in kind, not degree, from other authority in IEEPA. The authority to do one doesn't automatically include the authority to do the other.
The babysitter can lock the pantry, but that doesn't mean the babysitter can charge admission to the pantry.
Yeah, exactly. So locking is controlling access, charging is collecting revenue. Even though locking the pantry is harsher in one sense, charging is a different power entirely.
We need to share this with some property lawyers out there. But getting back to the case, what about the predecessor statute?
Yes, before IEEPA, there was the Trading with the Enemy Act, TWEA, which was IEEPA's predecessor. In 1971, Nixon imposed a 10% surcharge on almost all foreign imports under that act, which had virtually identical language. It said regulate importation. And court upheld it. So the government's argument was Congress enacted IEEPA 6 years later using the same words, so it must have incorporated that interpretation.
Yeah, if a court says regulate importation includes tariffs and Congress uses those exact words again, aren't they adopting that meaning?
Well, the court says no for multiple reasons. First, the case that talked about it wasn't a Supreme Court case. So the court says that a single expressly limited opinion from a specialized intermediate appellate court isn't going to create the kind of well-settled meaning that the court could presume Congress had adopted. It also adds some important context. There's a House report that went with IEEPA that explicitly complained that successive presidents had seized upon the open-endedness of that act to turn it into something quite different from what was envisioned in 1917. So that's Congress expressing concern about executive overreach under the predecessor statute, not endorsing it.
And Nixon's tariffs were nothing like what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, they weren't even close. The Nixon surcharge was 10%. This lasted less than 5 months, and it only applied to goods that had been the subject of prior tariff concessions. Nixon himself said that this was a temporary measure. Compare that to the 145% tariff on Chinese goods, and as well as tariffs on virtually all trade, with no end date and no constraints. So the court doesn't need to decide whether Nixon's narrow temporary action was lawful to conclude that this one wasn't.
Okay. So let's step back and state clearly what the court has held in this case.
All right, six justices, Chief Justice Roberts, Sotomayor, Kagan, Gorsuch, Barrett, and Jackson, all agree that IEEPA does not authorize the president to impose tariffs.
And the reasoning is textual.
Yes, it's purely textual. IEEPA contains no reference to tariffs or duties. The words regulate don't include the power to tax. It doesn't in IEEPA, it doesn't in any other federal statute that the government could identify. When Congress delegates tariff authority, it does so with explicit language and using careful limits. It didn't do either of those here. And we've had nearly 50 years of presidential practice that confirm this reading. No president had ever used IEEPA to impose tariffs. And we also know this, not just from the words themselves, but from the pattern. Every time Congress gave someone the power to collect money through tariffs, it's used different words, set different limits, and imposed different procedures. So the absence of those here isn't an accident. It's evidence that Congress didn't intend IEEPA to include that power.
So there's a lot more, though, to this case.
Oh, there sure is. Six justices agreed on this result, but almost every justice on the court felt the need to write separately. The case itself is seven opinions spanning 170 pages. And the disagreements aren't about the answer, they're about the reasoning, about what tools courts should use to interpret statutes like this, and what those tools mean for the next case.
And that connects back to our major questions episodes.
Yes. So the fight playing out across these is the fight we set up in season one. Is the major questions doctrine a freestanding constitutional principle, or is it just textualism done right? And when should it apply? That is what we will be discussing in the other half of this long major episode.
I really can't wait for that.
I know. It is coming up momentarily.
All right. Well, until then, I'm Mark Rourke.
And I'm Gwen Savitz.
See you next episode. So that does it for today's episode on administrative remedies. Thank you for joining us today. Please, if you enjoy this podcast and enjoy this episode, give us a like on Spotify, iTunes, or whatever platform you're listening on. And be sure to tune in next time where we'll continue to dive into the contours of administrative law. Because remember, you can't fix what you don't understand.